Welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast. Neil Tracy here with you alongside Bernard Jackman and Johnny Murphy. Another packed week. Every week is packed these days in rugby, it seems. URC getting properly tasty now. Four games left of the regular season and an absolute whopper of a playoff race developing. Wins at the weekend for Munster, Connacht and Ulster. Some wins more impressive than others. I think we'll get into that a little bit later on. Leinster, meanwhile, thumped down in Johannesburg by the Lions. So their lead at the top of the table down to just two over the Glasgow Warriors, and a trip to the Stormers to come this weekend. AIL finals week also too this weekend. We'll touch on that with Johnny and Birch. Alison Miller will be back with me a little bit later on to look ahead to the final round of games in the Guinness Women's Six Nations as well. But guys, to start with, performance of the weekend by the Irish sides. Munster kept up what's turning into a fairly remarkable run down in South Africa now. Four games across the last season, across the last 12 months without defeat down in South Africa. Three wins and a draw. 27-22 bonus point winners away to the Bulls in Pretoria. And in doing so, taking a massive step potentially towards a home quarterfinal as well. Never mind just solidifying themselves in the playoffs. Bernard, you were on commentary for that at the weekend. You weren't on the pod with us last week, but I would say the general consensus, I would have thought anyway, was going into that game that a losing bonus point wouldn't have been a bad return for Munster. I know they obviously would have fancied themselves to win it, but I think a losing bonus point wouldn't have been a bad return. They absolutely smashed it in the end.
Yeah, big win. In fairness, probably the first time in a long time that Rountree's been able to call on most of his main players, and yeah, they're playing better away from home than they are at home recently, and seemed as if they just got their preparation right. Obviously, they had a week, you know, a weekend off beforehand, and were able to just probably target the Bulls, you know, 2 weeks out, whereas the Bulls had a little bit of disruption, obviously some other team going up to Northampton and obviously the controversy around that. But in terms of what Munster did on the field, I thought defensively they were excellent. Attack, they pulled apart that Bulls defence very easily with their normal phase attack. Were accurate and, you know, took their points and built pressure, all the things that you would like to see from a mature team. So I think it was a very positive performance, and you know, it shows that they're not going to, I suppose, give up that URC title without a big fight.
No, and they obviously enjoyed this time of the season as well. And Johnny, it probably does. It kind of had me thinking that probably the playing conditions down in South Africa, I think, probably actually suit the way they like to play, where it's generally dry. It's probably going to be warm. You've got a reasonably fast track. And I think if you look back over the course of this season to the games where they've really struggled, it's been games where the conditions have actually been quite poor. I'm thinking of the games over Christmas between Leinster and Connacht, which were played in a complete monsoon. Northampton in both games against Northampton in the Champions Cup. The first one in Thomond Park, where it was raining and pouring for the entire game and they were dropping balls left, right and centre. Maybe to a lesser extent the one a few weeks ago where it was dry but it was very, very windy. That's probably something they do have to iron out, and Graham Rowntree has mentioned that a few times this season that they need to start playing better in certain conditions. But three wins out of four, and that other one being a draw in their last four games in South Africa over the last 12 months would lend you to believe that they are actually quite comfortable playing in what other teams would probably consider difficult conditions.
Yeah, I think you look at how they play and they're big on kind of ball and play, you know, how they try and keep the ball alive on all advantages. You look at Snyman's try just before halftime, you know, they really put them under pressure, even though it wasn't perfect. A couple of offloads go to deck, you know, and then even when they turn the ball over, you know, Scannell gets a really good turnover and they play automatically off that. That's a kind of a big shift in, you know, historically how Munster have wanted to play. I suppose Rob Penny was the person that tried to bring that in originally. But yeah, they played some unbelievable rugby. I also think that probably conditions when you can't call on those big frontliners with the injuries they've had to kind of, you know, just kind of control the ball and play maybe 10, 12 man rugby in terms of the carry, that's hurt them a small bit. when the conditions were have been bad for them. But yeah, they love fast tracks now, plenty of ball and play, and they're reaping the rewards for that. But yeah, it was a great performance.
Any room in the budget, Birch, to stick a roof on Thomond Park?
No, I don't think so. But I think they'll eventually get to the stage where their skill sets, you know, can play in the rain. I think it's already vastly improved. But I don't know why they were so poor against Cardiff, you know, a few weeks ago. Their skill set was really off that day, and lots of errors, and got into a battle that they shouldn't on paper. But as I said, they're hitting form at the right time. They enjoy touring, and another positive result this weekend would have them in a really good place for the tail end of the season.
Yeah, and like it, sorry, hit the microphone there. The impact, obviously, as well, you see of someone like Orgie Snyman, like those two little moments in the first half where he's able to take the ball running seriously hard at the line and holding it like it's a little mini ball in the front of his hand, just being able to flick an offload and keep an attack alive like that. It's something where, as great as it is to have now, you do feel for them next season when they're going to be missing that a little bit.
Yeah, look, he's top end, and that's why Munster re-signed him. Obviously, when he had his injury, they backed him, because you're not going to find another player like him on the market. He is unique. His skill set is unique, and it's just a shame. Like he integrated really well. He's very popular down there. Obviously, he's top end, but unfortunately, he just had horrendous luck. And Munster have had horrendous luck as well, just in terms of the way things have worked out for them. Obviously, you know, the Ben Healy, the Frisch issue, you know, Snyman not being able to stay, or the choice they had to make between Klein and Snyman. Now, Klein being injured, obviously, it's great to see the positive report that he's hopefully going to be back from this eye injury for next season, which is important for him and for Munster, him more importantly, I suppose. But yeah, they've just been very unlucky. And Snyman, in fairness, he had a big role in getting them over the line in the end last year. And you would imagine that if Munster are to win it, him being staying fit would be a big part of that.
I thought as well, Johnny, it was interesting, and it looked smart enough the way they went about the game at the weekend, just in terms of the selection as well, where you looked at the first 15, and I certainly thought anyway, like it didn't look like the strongest 15 that they were able to pick on paper, but they had held back Gavin Coombs, they'd held back Tom Ahern on the bench as well. John Hodnett was also there as well, Ollie Yeager. And it was in those last 20 minutes eventually where they actually did the damage and, you know, got back into the lead and saw the game out. You could see, obviously, the coaches were probably thinking full 80 minutes rather than just trying to get off to a fast start by holding a couple of what we would normally consider first choice players back in reserve and kind of just balanced out that selection.
Yeah, I think tactically the management got everything right. You know, they had to deal with travel. Okay, they weren't playing the previous weekend, but they had to deal with the travel, the altitude, everything. They were very obviously, you know, they in their selection, you know, very much kind of horses for courses in terms of having that kind of added extra coming off the bench. And yeah, it was just kind of, you know, 1-23 in management. They just got everything right. And yeah, it was a big statement performance, I think, particularly with everything that went before and what they were talking about with the Bulls and, you know, not playing those 13, 14 players against Northampton. The Bulls were really targeting this game. And yeah, they just, I think everyone, the whole squad, how they prepared, everything, they were just bang on.
You mentioned over the weekend as well then, Bernard, the Antoine Frisch situation. You mentioned it earlier on then as well in the podcast. So Mike Prendergast last week says, as far as they're concerned, he's going nowhere this summer. The word in France is that a handful of teams want him and are going to be going all out to get him. You've kind of suggested you think Mike Prendergast's stance is a bargaining tool really at this stage to try milk out whatever they can from. Is that what you expect to happen over the summer, that Munster are just trying to make sure they get whatever they can for Frisch And then the second part of that question is, have they the scope to spend it over the summer, or do they have the time to identify a good option to sign instead of him?
Yeah, look, I'm sure as soon as he made that statement that he wanted to play for France, Munster suddenly were in the market for a centre, you know, maybe not offering contracts to people, but certainly scoping what's out there. The problem is effectively, well, obviously they've signed Tom Farrell. So is he going to be the replacement for for Frisch? Mm-hmm. Or are they looking for someone else? So Farrell's a very good player.
That's a rumor that's been dotted around a little while now.
Is it not officially
confirmed? Dermot Kilgallen.
Yeah,
and Tom Farrell. Tom Farrell is done. Tom Farrell will be in a Munster jersey next year.
Is that breaking news?
It happened about 2 weeks ago, so maybe it's breaking news to everyone else. But it might not have been announced yet. I don't wait for announcements.
Fabrizio Birch.
No. Tom Farrell has gone to Munster. He's a great signing. Obviously, if the Munster could have some luck with his injury profile, they're getting a hell of a player. Mm. So is he the replacement for Anton Frisch, or was he signed to compete with Anton Frisch? I'm not sure, but I just think the thing is, it's just the way the world works in this, is that if a player wants to leave, it's very difficult for the club, and it's unfair. But if the club want to get rid of a player who's not performing or maybe isn't great in the dressing room, you know, they have to basically effectively often pay him out his contract or whatever. That's just the way it works. Coach gets sacked. You know, the club is in a very weak position. The player wants to move. He has a contract. The club is in a weak position again, because effectively, normally that gets resolved, and often there can be a transfer fee involved, but it's very rarely the full value of that player's contract, because, you know, do you really want to stop a player, you know, fulfilling his dream? Whether that's moving somewhere because for family reasons, if his family are unhappy, we've seen that many times, whether it's Anton Frisch's situation where he wants to play for France, you know, and has been very open about that. You know, he's not going to play for France playing for Munster. So I just think I would be absolutely shocked if this isn't resolved, but resolved in a manner that Anton Frisch is playing somewhere else, probably Toulon, who have money in their budget because Nakivalu has gone to sale Sharks, and they're very much in the market for Antoine. He's GIF. Rumor has it Galtier has promised him he'll play for France this summer. Whether that happens or not, I'm not sure. But they're the things that it's not Munster's fault.
Yeah, well, it's just the shoe was on the other foot a few months ago when Munster had agreed to sign Ollie Yeager for the start of next season, and obviously they pick up some injuries and they give Ollie Yeager a call and he leaves his contract with the Crusaders early. I don't know, was there any money changed hands there, or did the Crusaders just let him go? But you know, these things happen.
Yeah, sometimes there is money changed hands, sometimes there isn't. Yeah. It really depends on the situation. I think from Munster's point of view here, because it's France, and because effectively it's a little bit outside their control, you know, they effectively, like, Yeager was coming to Ireland at some stage anyway. Yeah. He's been a good servant to Crusaders. So I'm not sure how much the Crusaders stood in his way and how much they wanted, if they wanted anything. Whereas I think Munster have to get a transfer fee because they've been badly affected by this. And and French clubs are used to paying transfer fees. So Prendy and Graham Rowntree and the Munster CEO, they have to act as if they're 100% sure and committed that Antoine will stay. But behind the scenes, I'd be shocked if he's there next year. It may happen. Obviously, he may have a change of mind and decide to see out his contract and then try and play for France. But like, another year, a year's a long time in pro rugby, and that opportunity may be gone. So let's see. But that's not, like, Munster have done nothing wrong here. That's, I want to be clear on that. Munster have done nothing wrong here, and they're doing nothing wrong by trying to basically get as much as they possibly can. But and maybe as I said, he'll stay, but I'd be shocked if he does.
There's also a human aspect to that as well, but that leads into the professional aspect. Where are you going to get the best out of someone that, you know, you're, if they dig their heels in and they keep them and they're taking that opportunity away from them, are you going to get the best out of someone on the pitch? It's the same with guys that leave for family reasons. Are you going to get the best out of them if they're unhappy at home? And, you know, you have to look at that. That feeds into the professional sphere then, and you have to think about what is going to be best for you on the pitch ultimately, and that's getting the best out of the players. Can you get the best out of someone, as I said, you know, that's looking further afield, that wants to play for his home nation, you know, whether, you know, his family aren't happy for different reasons. So you have to come up to what an agreement is best for the individual, but ultimately when it comes down to it, it'll probably be best for that organization on the pitch, because you'll be getting the best out of that player.
Final point on Munster then, Johnny. Lions this week. Another win for Munster here in South Africa, and they're laughing. They're in an absolutely cracking spot for top four. But the Lions are a side who I'm sure we all would have seen last weekend and in weekends before, like when they did a job on Connacht a few weeks ago. They've been quietly very, very impressive now over the last couple of months. When they're on it, they are an absolutely excellent team.
Yeah, they're big, physical. They've got a very quick back three. Their captain, 12, he was very good this weekend. But there's a lot on the line for them as well in that race, because everyone around them, you know, race for the quarterfinals. Everyone around them won this weekend, so they really need, you know, 4 points. With if they don't get 4 points, they could be dropped. You know, they're waiting for favors, where at the moment it could potentially still be in their own hands. So yeah, it's a big one. But I think after the performance last week, the guys on tour enjoying themselves and getting them, you know, another good week's prep, you know, you'd fancy Munster. And I think all the other, you know, particularly Ulster and Connacht, are going to be shouting for Munster this weekend to try and do them a favour.
Yeah, hey, it's funny, like that is pretty much sums it up, that Munster want to win, but I think, Birch, a handful of other teams probably want Munster to win just as much as they do as well.
Yeah, it's incredibly tight. That's the most competitive URC I think I've seen across the board since the South Africans came in, and that's what we want. Like the Lions, let's be honest, 3-4 years ago were bang average, but they've really got their house in order. Obviously hammered Connacht a couple of weeks ago, and we thought that was all Connacht's fault, and it was, you know, but in hindsight, it's actually a decent result. It's more a reflection of how the Lions have improved rather than very poor by Connacht. Even though obviously they should be more competitive, but you know, it's gearing up really nicely, and obviously we'll have another little weekend off for the semi-finals of Europe, and then we'll have a weekend off for the final of Europe. But I think I'm really enjoying the URC this year.
Yeah, and to carry on that theme then of just how competitive that playoff race is, it might be a nice time to bring in Ulster here, because their result at the weekend, I think, summed up just how crazy that whole playoff race is, where Ulster come into the weekend in 8th place, they win against Cardiff, and they finish the weekend in 10th. Which is just absolutely remarkable to think you drop two places in the table after a win. A bizarre win, it has to be said, though. So I was up in Kingspan Stadium for it on Friday night, and I want to give a shout out to actually a very, 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 very nice Ulster fan who he was sitting in the back row of the stand in front of me. I don't know if you're familiar with the way the press box is at Kingspan Stadium. So we're way at the back of the stand, and there's a little space in front of us in the first rows of the seats there, and he was sitting at the back of it. And a couple of times during the game, he'd kind of turn around and try to catch my eye, and he was saying something about how largely was how poor Ulster were. And at halftime, he kind of walked by and had a couple of words with me, just you know, telling me what he thought of the match. And when Theo Cabango sprinted down into the corner and scored what he thought was a hat-trick try, my friend got up out of his seat, said a couple of words to me about how much of a joke this referee was, and he was giving Ulster nothing. And he walked out the door and down the steps. So I'm not sure, dude, by the time maybe he got down towards the corner where he could see out onto the pitch, maybe he realised there was a TMO check going on and he might have been able to see it. But I hope he was able to see John Cooney kicking those winning points and the try getting reversed. But it summed up what was a fairly bonkers night. Birch, on that disallowed try at the end of the game, Cardiff were absolutely furious, as I'm sure some people would have seen with the official match report on the Welsh Rugby Union's website, which has now been drastically altered to take away words like robbed and other things like that. What was your thoughts on that Rhys Carré deliberate knock-on try overturned?
That was incredibly harsh on Cardiff, to be fair. I'm not 100% sure. I don't think he was knocked on. I think the ball went back. I know other people are convinced. I'm not sure that ball was knocked on. I don't think.
I think it was a knock on.
Yeah, right. That's fine. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. Do you think it's a penalty?
I do, because I think it's a fairly desperate swipe, is what I thought at it.
Yeah.
I actually thought the Jacob Stockdale one earlier on was a very harsh yellow, because I would have said he should have caught that ball. It was actually like a bad drop.
Yeah.
But it is
something that the referees are very tight on at the moment, because there's a lot of blitzing teams and wingers getting high, that if you don't catch that ball, they're very clear that it's, you know, across all levels, that it can be a yellow card because of what, you know, you're probably leaving two men outside you. The penalty at the end, it's either one or the other. It's either goes back and it's play on and it's a try. But if you think it does go forward, then a prop swiping at it, then it probably is a penalty. But I don't think there's any conclusive evidence either way.
No.
In fairness to Richie Murphy, he said after the game he thought Ulster were very, very lucky to win. And he actually said he didn't think he couldn't see a conclusive knock-on from Carré as well.
Yeah.
So fair play to him for being honest about it. I actually do think there was a clear knock-on there. But I suppose we'll never really get to the bottom of it. I wouldn't want to be a referee.
Adamson
was consistent with the two decisions,
yeah,
you know, given penalties both ways. But moving on from that, regardless of whether or not that was a correct decision, Ulster were remarkably lucky to win that game, Bernard.
Yeah, there hasn't
they weren't
been
good. They weren't good.
No, they weren't good. And look at it. It kind of I would be quite critical of that Munster squad, because obviously they wanted Dan out. But there's been no real bounce, like no massive bounce. And Richie's gone in there, and Richie's a very good coach, and he's trying to get them going. But obviously it's very difficult mid-season to make significant changes. So you would need to see a pre-season under Richie to judge him correctly. But I think the players aren't showing that, like, it was a coaching fault. I think they're just average at the moment as a group. And I think they're not fulfilling the potential that they either think they have or we thought they had. And whose fault is it? It's at some stage it's coming back to the players. And unless they get their act together, they're going to have a season of just frustration, a full season of frustration rather than an end of season where there's hope and optimism. So I would put it down to the playing group. I mean, Cardiff, to be fair to them, incredibly competitive this year. In fairness, Cardiff and Ospreys deserve a lot of credit, because despite the farce that is Welsh rugby at the moment, both Toby Booth and Matt Sherratt have created two squads who fight tooth and nail. Obviously, the Ospreys result in Stormers was excellent. Cardiff, they're not getting any breaks. Like, there's so many of those games that they've had losing bonus points where they could easily
six defeats in a row. Five of them were one score games, and the other was it a 13-point defeat against Leinster, which there's no shame in.
They were
knocking around the playoffs.
Yeah.
But even that Leinster game, they were in. Like, they had opportunities to, you know, like, I think that probably it reflects well on Leinster that win. It's not like it was, you know, you look at the scoring, but then when you actually look at it and look at the game, Cardiff were bang in that game. They were just unlucky, and that's what sums up their season. Like last week I said, they've been really unlucky in terms of their results. They're a really good side. They're a decision away from clicking. And they're just not getting the rub of the green. So yeah, they've been one of the teams that if they keep going, you know, maybe next year they could really do something, but they have been very unlucky this season.
Yeah, but then obviously on the flip side with Cardiff is the while they're showing signs of improvement this year, Burners, like yesterday, Ellis Jenkins retires at the age of 30, and that just kind of it's a reflection on the state of Welsh rugby. We saw what was it Josh Turnbull a few weeks ago as well decided to I know he's a bit older as well, but you know he's quit as of now to take up a new career. Like that's the tricky part where Welsh rugby is in, where
yeah, absolutely, and there's rumors,
you know, it's one step forward, one step back.
Yeah, and there's rumors Mason Grady mightn't be there next year, although they're desperate to try and keep him. Cardiff are a little bit potentially better because they have a new ownership structure who apparently have some money to invest. But what, as I said, what Sherrod has done, like Jenkins, the defense coach, getting Jenkins, he's only part time because they can't afford to pay him full time, you know. So, like, what other team in the URC has a part time defense coach? I can't think of any offhand. Zebra's guy's full time now. So, so that's what they're dealing with. But fair play to them, they represent that jersey with pride, and it's not going to be easy next year for them, but certainly you would have confidence in that coaching group led by Sherratt to get the best out of them.
Ulster then, Benetton this week, and like Johnny, we were talking last week about Ulster's run in it and how it's on paper it looks reasonable enough. Like they had Cardiff last week, Benetton this week, which I know Benetton are good this season, but you would back yourselves to beat them at home. They have, what is it? They're playing Leinster the week before a potential Champions Cup final. The way we were looking at it, there's four winnable games out of those last five that they would have had. The trouble is, though, now, where you're looking at their injury list, and from last week, James Hume picked up what really looks like being a serious knee injury now, and best wishes to him, because it looks like he might have a long rehab ahead of him. Stephen Kitshoff is done now. He's finished with Ulster for this season because of that knee injury. Nathan Doak, Jake Flannery both picked up knocks at the weekend, as did Tom O'Toole. They're doubtful for this week. And then you add in Ian Henderson, Nick Timoney and Rob Herring, who were all missing last week, and we're not sure if they're going to be back this week or not. I saw Nick Timoney wearing a protective boot on Friday night at Ravenhill. Doesn't really bode well for him being back this week. There's a potential they could be going into this game against a dangerous Benetton team with a shell of a team out there.
Yeah, Benetton are a really good side. Like, they play good rugby. And yeah, this weekend I think is more difficult than people would probably give credit for, just because of the historical kind of, you know, performances of the Italian team. But I think, you know, this is kind of, with the position obviously winning and then dropping down two positions in the ladder after last weekend's results, this is kind of do or die. And nearly every game is kind of cup rugby for them to get themselves into that knockout stage. And with a big injury list, it's hard. They do have the luxury of being at home, but it's going to be tough for them. Like I still think it's going to be tough for them to, you know, to get to that, to get into that top eight. Even though, as you say, you know, fixtures are okay for them, but yeah, a performance like they did last Friday night, this weekend against Benetton, they could struggle, you know, they easily could struggle. And I think they need to, and we've spoken about this nearly all season, they need a real kind of performance, you know, and then back that performance up the next week, because they haven't done that at all. You know, you thought the Leinster one at Christmas was that, and then, you know, but they just, they're off, and there's something off in that dressing room. Don't know what it is. You know, there is just something off. But they need to come together over the final four games, or they're going to have a very, very long preseason and a long off season to build into next season.
Yeah, they look like a team that just they need the season to end tomorrow, to be honest, and just be in that top eight and get Champions Cup and be able to park it and, you know, start afresh. I'll move on to Connacht though, because 54-16 win over Zebra at the weekend. And again, Johnny, we spoke last week about you're constantly looking at everyone's fixtures between now and the end of the season, who have they got when. And Connacht finish off their last three games away to Munster, home against the Stormers, and then away to Leinster. And we said last week against Zebra and this coming Saturday against Dragons away from home, they are two, at a minimum, wins, and ideally with bonus points as well. They got the first one of those, and impressively so, 54-16. A nice stress-free evening for all concerned. Now they've got to go and do that all over again this weekend against the Dragons. These two games, absolute must win at a minimum.
Yeah, they have to this block. We said it last week, 10 points this block, and then, you know, hope that, you know, teams around them, you know, they'll be looking at other fixtures, particularly that Munster one. But this is a 5-pointer, and I think with how they play, well, where Dragons are at the moment, you know, they definitely be favourites to go out and get that 5 points. But they need to, this is a big one for them, and hope results go their way, and then pick up what they can over the last three games. But I think this is, again, you know, the league's been great because everyone is, you know, nearly everyone is fighting for something. And but 5 points is a must this weekend for Connacht.
And Bernard, the other part actually we probably should mention is we've obviously said it a handful of times where teams are targeting top eight. Top eight isn't necessarily going to get you Champions Cup, because if the Sharks go and win the Challenge Cup, all of a sudden you're realistically thinking you've got to be top seven, because they're obviously going to be taking one of the Champions Cup spots. So if the Sharks win the Challenge Cup and you finish in eighth place in the URC, you've got to win the URC to be in the Champions Cup next season. So it's for a lot of teams, I think you probably have to make sure you're in top seven rather than top eight. And that's just going to make things even more fun over the next few weeks.
Yeah. And eight obviously probably gets you Leinster as well. Yeah. So you're trying to avoid that at all costs. But look, I think for some of those clubs, you know, they'd be just happy to be eight because at the moment it's just so competitive around there, and they'll take their chances on the Sharks winning the Challenge Cup. But yeah, it is it's set up like this. Every game now has something, nearly every game has something massive at stake, and it's exactly what we want. Like, we want a really competitive domestic competition, and now we have it.
What do you think Connacht's ceiling is this season then, Johnny? Like, let's say they finish 7th or 8th, and let's say it is good enough for Champions Cup. If they can cause a shock and win a quarter final, maybe in the, like, if they finish 7th, for example, they go away to Glasgow potentially in the quarterfinals of the URC, is a win against Glasgow away from home and get back to another URC semi-final, is that a good, solid season all around?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a fairly good season. I think how competitive it is to get in that top four is a good result for Connacht. A new coaching ticket, embedding new structures, how they want to play. A young coaching side, a new developing group, and I think that's good. I think Heineken Cup qualification for Heineken Cup. Again, more revenue. That's a really good thing for Connacht. Going away to Glasgow. Glasgow are a really good, impressive side. But you're going over. You're playing on a track that you're used to. So, and they go in with a free shot if they do get there. But there's a lot of rugby to be played for them to get there. But I think this weekend, get those 5 points in them. But I think Heineken Cup rugby, Champions Cup rugby is a good return for Connacht this year.
Yeah, and I suppose teams will know in advance of those last couple of rounds whether or not 7th or 8th is going to be good enough, because the Challenge Cup final will have taken place by then. Last point on Connacht quickly, Birch. Just want to give a shout out Matthew Devine, 2 tries at the weekend, got his senior contract last week. They're getting good at they've always had a good reputation and a pretty decent pipeline for the population size they've had there. And they've consistently produced every couple of years a couple of really, really promising good young players. Like, we were talking, Kyle Ford started this season is all we were talking about. You look at Matthew Devine last weekend, looks a really, really promising player.
Absolutely, yeah. And obviously, Hugh Gavin's going to come true. You'd imagine next year as well. It's Devine is class. His brother is playing for Corinthians.
Yeah.
In a playoff this weekend. Center really
John,
strong.
Isn't it?
Yeah, John, really strong gain line type player. Now obviously they have likes of Colin Ford and they have had Farrell and Daly and Bundy and Hawkshaw. So it's not easy to get game time there. But I think Devine is probably the reason that they let Marmion go. They knew he was coming through. And I think Blade, to be fair to him, has probably played too many minutes. Blade's form has just dipped a little bit in the last four or five games, starting to make some erratic or bad decisions. And he's certainly someone who looks like he benefited from a little bit of a break or sharing that workload. So look, it was Zebra didn't show up at all. So you can't read too much into it, but Devine is very good. He's a very good player. And I think he'll certainly give Blade a little bit to think about, or they'll share the game time a little bit more over the last part of the season. And for next year, you know, who's to know where his ceiling is. But it's great to see that. You know, his father is from Ballinasloe.
Mm.
His father played for Buccaneers, played for Connacht. And I think both sons will end up being very, very good players for Connacht.
Yeah.
And they're doing a great job. Connacht are doing a great job in trying to bring those homegrown players through over the previous years, where, you know, in previous years it would have been like say even the likes of Jordy Duggan when they're, you know, in the Leinster sub academy, if they don't get, now they're still picking up those guys, you know, Ben Murphy and those guys are going there next year, but still to have that cohort of real homegrown guys is massively important. And it's a credit to Eric, Sebastian and Mark, who has been there previously, that are really bringing that talent through, and they're doing a great job at that underage with, you know, they don't have, you know, they just don't, that's the reality. They don't have the resource of a school game. They don't have the resources of the other provinces, the playing population, everything. So it's brilliant to see, and fair play to Eric and all the academy structure there and what they're doing, and their development, their talent ID stuff has been very, very good.
Yeah, exciting times for Connacht going ahead over the next few years with some of these young players. Would Leinster, apologies to Leinster fans, we're only going to be touching on them today. They did dominate our podcast last week, so you know, we gave you that. You've had a lot of coverage over the last couple of weeks, but hammered 44-12, and Bernard, ultimately the story of the game is, if you're 22-0 down after a quarter of an hour, it's always going to be hard to fight your way out of that one. They probably dominated the middle third of that game, but once they only got one try back for us, like, it was, the comeback was never really on, and it does put a little bit of pressure on them now. Stormers this weekend, who are also coming in off the back of a disappointing defeat at home to the Ospreys. You've Glasgow away to Zebra, so unless Leinster can pull off away a win this Saturday evening down in Cape Town, there's, you know, Leo Cullen is going to be looking potentially at dropping down into second in the table.
Yeah, they will, but I still think they'll end up back at first. It's actually probably bad news for Connacht, who played them a week after the payment in the last round.
Yeah,
a week after the Champions Cup final, which obviously Leinster have to get to. But you'd imagine if Leinster have to win that to get top seed, they'll go strong. The week after the season, the fall's a lot better for Leinster this year, in terms of being able to pick rotate his squad. Obviously, Leo got a lot of slack for rotating his team for that Munster semi-final in the Viva and getting caught, and then losing the final the week after. He doesn't have to be as risky this year, the way it'll unfold. Some of his big players can actually can play more URC games at the tail end if he needs to. So yeah, look, you would say that it's Leinster were very poor, and like some of the players that we laud all the time about being good enough to play for other provinces, but are happy to stay in Leinster, didn't really perform. You know what I mean? Didn't perform. Now obviously they had a shock start to it, got cut open, and that sometimes happens when Leinster changed a lot of players who haven't been playing for a while. Their defence can be a little bit all over the place, but which is understandable because it is such a radical defence. And the Lions knew exactly how to exploit it. And then Leinster dominated most of the key stats, but just couldn't converting to scores. So can that team bounce back against Stormers? The Stormers, they're very loose. Like
they're flaky.
They're so flaky, yeah. Like and now obviously they're coming off a bad home loss. The Ospreys, pressure's on, but the Stormers will give you opportunities. So, you know, on paper, yeah, Leinster should struggle, but they may end up getting something out of that, maybe a losing bonus point, maybe even beat them, which obviously would be a massive blow to the Stormers' chances to lose two home games in a row. But I'd expect Leinster to be a hell of a lot better. But as I said, the Stormers are desperate now for a win, so it'll be difficult.
Yeah, loads of great games this weekend. I'll put a pin in Leinster there, because I do want to mention before we finish up, Johnny, it's AIL finals this weekend. Doubleheader at the Aviva Stadium on Sunday for the men's Division 1 final and the women's final. And then obviously on Saturday as well, you've got the various promotion relegation deciders up and down the divisions as well. But on Sunday, 1:45 Railway Union against UL Bowes in the women's final, followed then by Terenure and Cork Conn in the men's final at 4. You're obviously head coach in Nace, so you're heavily involved in the league. You've been following it diligently for the last few years. There seems to be a very, very good buzz around the league, in particular in these last 2-3 seasons. Coming out of COVID, it seems like, I don't know, has the AIL found its place in the kind of Irish rugby pyramid a little bit better in the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, I think coming out of COVID, a lot of people went down to their local rugby club just to start because they couldn't get to necessarily the pro games and that kind of stuff. And then when people saw the product that was on, you know, some particularly our league can be a bit, oh, look, you score 2 tries, we'll score 4. So, yeah. You know, it's not
that was a lot of Nace matches this year.
Was, yeah, defense is not one of the things that we were great at this year. But I think when they saw that, they kind of stuck at it then. You know, you look at the crowds that were at both games this weekend, particularly in the 1A playoffs. Mm. Like, there were huge crowds. And it is a really good product. You've got really good quality players, all the academy guys, a lot of development guys. So even someone like Dermot Mangan, he would have played a good bit for UCD this year. Guys like that, you know, they're learning their trade in adult rugby. And I think a big couple of things, I think the change in terms of, you know, the Irish 20s management saying that they want those guys playing adult rugby has helped the league. So, you know, people are seeing, even the likes of us with Tadhg Brophy, you know, he's playing on TV on a Friday night, they'll come down. We got extra supporters this year from the local area that came down just to see Tadhg play. And a lot of people are kind of jumping on that too. You know, and you're going to see a lot of future internationals playing. And I think a lot of people are enjoying that. It's a great standard, really competitive leagues across all 5. And I think, you know, it's a tenner, and for that tenner, you get a point with that tenner when you go in. So it's a really enjoyable way to spend a Saturday afternoon. This weekend, both games will be really hotly contested, good brands, both sides, and yeah, get down and support it as much as you can. But I think, to be fair, there was a lot of conversation pre and post COVID with the professional game around where does it sit, what does it do. And to be fair, the majority of the time, the professional, the provinces are supporting it and releasing, particularly those younger guys, you know, who are under 23, you know, 25, and they're playing in the AIL week in, week out. And that's added a huge amount to the quality of the leagues, particularly 1A and 1B.
And Bernard, like, there's a huge amount of work going on around making it an enjoyable day out for a supporter to go down and pay their tenner in. Like, as I've said plenty of times, I'm a member in Terenure, and I popped down there on Saturday evening after their match. I was working for it, so I didn't get down to see it. But like, I got down there about 8 o'clock in the evening. There were still hundreds of people down there. There were outdoor bars. There was food, tents and vans and stuff like that, and, you know, making it enjoyable. But ultimately, the most important thing, and it's what Johnny kind of said a couple of times, is that the product on the pitch over the last few years is really, really top quality.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think
it's not like teams aren't just playing 8-man rugby like we might have seen 10, 15 years ago.
No, because players don't want to. It's different. Like, when I came out of school, you do whatever the coach tells you, and that's fine. And you probably didn't move club, whereas now if players will move to where the product is better, whether that's the atmosphere, you know, whether that's the facilities to train, but more, I'd say it's a mixture of all things, the coaching, the brand of rugby they play. And that's keeping more and more of those, you know, 20 plus or 25 plus players playing. You know, there was a massive drop off where people concentrate on their career, their social life. I think now everything's kind of working in cohesion, and people understand you can have a good social life, you can have a good career, and you can play good rugby. And the league is facilitating that, the clubs are facilitating that. So I'm going Sunday, I'm looking forward to it. And you know, we've obviously had two brilliant semi-finals. We've had some great games all year. And last year's final, like obviously I know Turner won it easy in the end, but it was hell of an occasion and a hell of a game. I'm really looking forward to seeing Con Turner this weekend, and it's obviously, you know, a different matchup, but it should be fascinating.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really good. So they both of those get. Go ahead, Johnny.
Just before we finish, just want to shout out to two guys that would have coached at the Irish club side. They've finished for Clontarf this year, Matt Darcy and Tony Ryan.
Yeah.
Stalwarts of the AIL game, both had stints in professional short-term contracts, and two great players, two great lads. And unfortunately, they didn't get the send-off from a performance, from a medal perspective that they would have wanted. But two great lads, and hopefully they enjoyed their couple of days out with their playing cohort on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, well, they already have a few medals in the pocket to begin with, so their pockets are jingling as it is. No, fair play to the two lads. I saw that as well on Saturday evening after their game down in Cork on. So congrats to Matt Darcy and to Tony Ryan as well on two absolutely fantastic AIL careers. Both of those games, the women's final and the men's Division 1A final, in the Aviva Stadium Sunday afternoon. Get down there and watch it. The other games down around the divisions, the promotion relegation playoffs on Saturday afternoon as well. So have a look out, see whichever one's closest to you. And I'd absolutely encourage you to get along to those. But Johnny and Birch, thanks a million for joining us. It's been a pleasure as always chatting to you. That's our URC and AIL look. And coming up next, Ali Miller is going to be with me, and we'll look ahead to Ireland against Scotland this Saturday afternoon in the Guinness Women's Six Nations. Now, welcome back to the RTE Rugby Podcast. Alison Miller is here with me ahead of round 5 of the Guinness Women's Six Nations, where we're, I suppose, looking back, Alison, on England 88, Ireland 10. But I would say we'll probably look more ahead to Ireland and Scotland this weekend, because I think if Ireland were to beat Scotland this weekend up in Kingspan Stadium on Saturday afternoon, finish the championship off with two wins, and who knows, potentially a third place finish, depending on how Italy Wales goes, I would say that result against England will be forgotten fairly quickly.
Yeah, and like, I suppose the thing is, you would have been expecting it was going to be, probably without being negative, it was going to be an Ireland loss anyway. So the scoreline, obviously, you know, we didn't expect it to be that high, but I suppose if the players can leave their ego out of it, it doesn't make a difference. It literally has no impact on this week's preparation, if they're being realistic and being very logical about it. So, they just have to focus on this week and their preparation going into the France game. And, like, if they win this weekend, it will be deemed as a successful Six Nations for them, especially in comparison to last year's results, you know. So, you know, two wins, hopefully, and it could easily have been a third against Italy. So regardless of the England result, it doesn't really matter when you're...
Yeah, and like, I know to some people that might come across as like we're making excuses for a pretty heavy Ireland defeat, like a point shy of being a record defeat, let's be brutally honest about it. But like, just with the way the Six Nations is at the moment, and with the way England are and the other countries as well, Ireland's campaign isn't going to be defined by how many points they lose to England or France by. Ultimately, it's how they do against Wales, Scotland and Italy. And if you look back at last year's championship, where Ireland played England in round 4, and put up arguably their best performance of the championship and held England to, I think it was just below 50 points. That looked like it was a very, very committed Ireland performance. They threw everything at it. But a week later, they went out and they were given a clipping by Scotland in the final round and they left with a wooden spoon. So ultimately, it's really coming down to what happens this weekend rather than what happened in Le Mans or what happened in Twickenham last week.
I agree. And I think it's a way, like, obviously Ireland, their aim was to finish third. And I think you got to be realistic when you're playing England and France. But I think it's also, it's a good measure for Ireland to see where they are at against England. And, you know, you constantly question yourself as a player, you know, am I on it physically in terms of fitness, in terms of conditioning, in terms of my skill level? So I think it's good. Like, there can be no positives in the England game. Let's not, we'll call a spade a spade. Yeah. And the players will know that. But I think it's good for them to check themselves in those games and go, am I doing everything? And all players, Scottish players, Wales, Welsh players, Italian players, to try and bridge that gap. Are they doing everything they can, you know, at the moment to try and be as good as the England's? And so, you know, that's their benchmark to see, but they'd be realistic in the sense that they try and get their wins against those other countries and Ireland against Scotland. So, you know, it's being realistic, but it's also trying to see how the best do it and how you stay in touch with them and can you stay in touch with them? And if we're not staying in touch with, we aren't obviously staying in touch with the likes of England and France, well, what can we do individually as players and then we come together collectively? Because you've got to do a little bit of both. I think you have to, you know, I don't want to say it's a balancing act, it's completely one-sided, but you can't let them get so far ahead that you could never see it as an option in the future, you know?
Yeah, and that, like, the other part of it then as well is, if Ireland do the business this weekend, and if potentially they get their third place finish, which would put them into WXV1 later on in the season, ultimately Ireland are going to have to be playing against England and France and the likes of New Zealand, and those 88-10 results aren't going to cut it if they're playing those kind of teams week on week later on in the championship. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword where they're, like, in trying to secure their best possible finish, I think a realist might actually say that in the long term, finishing fourth and getting some good competitive in WXV2 might be better for them in the long run. But obviously, if you've set a target of a third place finish, that ultimately is what you want to be doing in the Six Nations. And you have to deal with the fact then that later on in the year, you're going to be having more of these games against the likes of England, France, New Zealand, Canada, all the rest of the teams that are in a tier above. And ultimately, those hammerings week on week just aren't going to cut it anymore.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, obviously the players want to come third and they want to achieve that because that's successful. But you never go out going, we should maybe just finish fourth because we'll have an easier run. So it's a really difficult one, because realistically it's going to be, you know, whatever team does get to, if it's Ireland, that's going to be really tough. But I think the learnings for them is, like, where, you know, did they give up against England at some point? Because it, like, there was tries there at the weekend that weren't, you know, they weren't grinded out. You know, it was just straight through missed tackles. You know, Zoe Alcroft's try, like, that was, you know. So how do they actually go into prepare for those games where they know they're not going to be on it? You know, stay in the fight and frustrate England and cause them headaches is what I think Scott Beaman had said before. And you got to look at yourself as well, individually as a player, and go, what did I, you know, did my opposition player absolutely, you know, have me, or did I have some part in the game? So, yeah, it is important. I mean, if we look at the other results of the game, I think Ireland will be disappointed because it's the highest score of, like, you know, you have a 46-0, a 48-0, a 48-10, I think. So, you know, they won't be happy with that. But I would have probably been hoping for like a 48-10-ish where we might score a try or two. But yeah, they got to learn to stay in these games because you have to want to be the best, you know, and you have to try and come up with ways to, you know, can we be fitter than England? Like, is that an objective as a team that we can be, right? So at 60 minutes, we're fitter than them. Like, is that an objective? Like, you have to find other ways not, I'm not saying that that's the other ways to beat them. I'm saying other ways to try and be some way competitive at different points in the game. You know, like they were against France. Like against France, Ireland were, they were able to, even though France had a lot of possession, they were still able to snuff them out when France had played scoring. Like that's what I mean. Like, you know, you're on it. You're able to just navigate yourself out of difficult situations, even though you shouldn't. So, yeah, it's a big learning curve for Ireland.
Yeah, and like that's what you said there, where it's kind of like you have to pick your battles in these games and take sort of like mini wins out of it in certain areas. Like you mentioned, you mentioned the game against France, where obviously France won comfortably. Ireland never looked like winning it. But when we came out of that game and we were analysing it, like I remember you were on Against the Head that Monday night, and you were able to look at the fact that defence stood out. Defence was really, really good across the course of those 80 minutes. And that was you could chalk it up as like a win in terms of a tactical element. Their kicking game was very, very good on the day. Obviously, though, from that England game at the weekend, there wasn't anything tangible to take out of it. I would say, though, I was out yesterday at the Sport Ireland campus when Ireland were doing their media, and I did think, I know Turn the Page is a bit of a cliche and stuff like that, and, you know, moving on. It didn't seem like the players or management were in any way rocked by the game at the weekend. They seemed in a pretty good mood. They seemed confident. It wasn't like last year where they were coming in off the back of a defeat, and there was a lot of fighting talk, but you got the sense that it was all passion, and it was all, like there was a desperation to the way they were talking. Whereas I found this week and throughout the course of this championship, it's been very, very measured the way they've reacted to games.
Yeah, like I would have just found last year, and I don't have much time for it, is, you know, very much party line. It was every player was saying something similar, and it was like, you know, and I was just looking for someone to come out and be honest and go, you know, whatever, say something honest. But this year, there is a bit more honesty and there is passion. And as we said, they're putting on their, I suppose, their realistic hat. They're being logical. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't. If they had played absolutely fantastic and, you know, and put it to England, they'd still be in the same position. So they've probably been quite rational about it, and they have to be rational and get on with it. And he seems to have a good way of, I know, you know, framing things. And it's always how you frame things. If you're a good leader there to frame it. And the two girls are doing a good job there. And I think in contrast last year, you know, we weren't scoring any tries, and it was all a bit, you know, let's wish and hope that we can do better next week. And so they actually have evidence this year you know, evidence of past performance and wins and, you know, good passages of playing and good defensive sets. So they have evidence, and you need evidence to go forward and have confidence. Like, there was nothing to give them confidence last year, and no one else was probably giving them confidence to do it. So that's the difference. They have evidence in what they're trying to do in their games, and I'm sure what they're doing in training, and they can actually look at, you know, different games, whether it be times in that Italian game, obviously British Wales game, you know, very good passages in the France game. So they can take that evidence and go with it. That's the difference. There was no evidence to suggest that last year.
Yeah, and this is the week where they've obviously brought in their new performance coach this year. For the Six Nations, Sean, I think his surname is escaping me. This is probably the week where he's going to earn his money to turn the page, as we said, from that England game on to Scotland. And let's start looking at that now, because this is probably the best Scottish team ever at the moment. We're up to sixth in the world rankings. Okay, they've lost to England and France, but they've put up decent showings against both. They were comfortably better than Ireland this time last year. In the past, probably in your era, Ali, a game against Scotland, we would have generally expected you to win and win relatively comfortably against them. This is one where probably Ireland are going in as underdogs, and to pull off a win in Belfast this weekend would be a significant step for them.
Yeah, like I think if you look at Scotland, Scotland's first time to beat Italy away in Italy since 1989. So that was huge. That's huge. And also Scotland's first time to beat Wales in Wales ever. So they've done done two things in the Six Nations that are huge for them, and they've got the momentum. And I think I've like watching them. I watched the whole game against France, and boy, were they impressive! Like, I mean, it was 8-5 to France with 70 minutes gone on the clock, and then France scored in the 88th minute to make it, you know, 15-5. So context, it could have ended 8-5. So this is a very good Scottish team with some really, really good players, and they seem to be kind of. I always felt like probably before this year and probably, you know, last year in the WVX, they were always nearly there. They were always kind of knocking on the door, and you were like, they just, you know, they'd be nearly producing a really good game and they would like let it go in the last minute, or they'd, you know, they'd miss a conversion, or they'd do something, just they were nearly there, like the bridesmaid, you know, nearly there, and just weren't ever been able to get over the line, where they seem to have. It's something mental that has clicked with them, that they've just managed to get over that and are playing some really, really good rugby. And they have some, like, they've good experience in that back line. You know, Helen Nelson at 10 has been around for a long time. Lisa Thompson. Now, Chloe Rowley will miss the game against Ireland, and that's great for Ireland, for a dangerous clear out. But even someone like Rona Lloyd in the wing, and they've changed their wingers. Fran McGee played the last day, but they've also Corinne Grant. So they have a bit of danger. They like to kind of play to the edge, and they have good forwards as well. And, you know, they scored a good driving line at Mall against Italy. And that would be a big victory against Italy, because, you know, Italy are a very good team and have been playing well despite possibly results.
And there's an edgy history to these two teams now, going back to Parma and that World Cup qualifier two and a half years ago, followed up by Ireland snatching that game in Belfast in the last round of the championship 2 years ago as well. And then Ireland going over to the Hive last year and getting a thumping. It's probably the best way of putting it. So there's a nice little edge to, and a nice little rivalry that's developed over these last few years.
Yeah, there has been a nice little rivalry developed over the last few years. But I suppose the Irish team is probably very different from 2022. I think the Scottish team is probably more settled in terms of the last few years, where Ireland, if you look at, you know, you've Katie Corrigan there, who's new, you've got the Sevens girls coming back in that would have been there. We've new players probably. So I don't know if they carry that kind of, if it would be the same for Ireland as it is for Scotland, but
same baggage isn't there, I suppose.
I wonder, maybe it is, or maybe they don't see it as baggage. Hopefully they don't see it at all, but you know, it is a good rivalry between them. A lot of that team that disappointingly lost that game in Parma are retired or gone or not selected anymore, so hopefully that won't have an impact. And and maybe those players that were there learned a lesson, you know. You know, simple lessons in terms of chasing tries to the corner and stuff. Just, you know, not to give up on things. And it's, hopefully we can have a team that has that mindset. We're not giving up on anything. We're chasing everything. We're staying in the game, staying in the fight, regardless of how the game is going in different positions in the field.
I'm going to push you for a verdict.
Oh, of course. I'm going to say Ireland. If I look back to how they played against Wales, and if they can get that groove back again, I just think they looked so dangerous. They were coming in waves and waves and waves and threats all across the field. They had, if they can play like that as they did against Wales, but I think Scotland would be more difficult opposition. But I think we do have a lot of threats around the field, and obviously it was a difficult day for, you know, people like Bavin Parsons against, in my opinion, Abby Dow is the world's best winger. Yeah. I think there'll be opportunities for Parsons. I think there'll be opportunities for Higgins. I think, you know, our forwards, big carries. Obviously, someone like Aoife, the name escapes me, this is terrible. Wafer. How could you forget her name this year? Aoife Wafer, she was obviously, you know, had no space against England. And, but I think they will come to the fore again. I think there'll be opportunities for them. So I'm going to say Ireland by 3.
Ireland by 3. If Ireland lose by maybe 7 odd points, losing bonus points, how would, like, I'm kind of taking out of the given, if Ireland win this weekend, whether or not they finish third or fourth, depending on how Italy do against
France,
you can kind of chalk that off as a good, solid campaign. If they finish third, really, really good campaign. If they finish fourth with a win this weekend, that's a good return based on where they were last year. If they were to lose this weekend and finish down around fifth, one win out of five games, what's sort of a grade are you giving this campaign? I know it hasn't actually happened yet, but I'm just trying. You know, it's like there's a big difference, obviously, between finishing third and fifth, and how
huge difference, yeah.
But like how this championship is viewed, if you get me.
I think, yeah, it's a difficult question to answer, to be honest. But I think you will. I think over the years, even when I was playing, like, and the difference between maybe coming third and coming fifth is huge for what it was for me as a player, because essentially you're judged on your performances, and you really matter whether you played a great game and lost by a point. No one remembers that in years to come. So for me as a player, I think it'd be huge to finish higher. I think we're over this. We have to be over the stage, or we will never get anywhere if we keep looking back to moral victories and played really well. Because I don't think that has got us anywhere over the last few years.
No.
You know, teams saying we played really well and we're building. Like, we can't talk like that anymore. Like,
you can't keep building, you know?
You can't, like, you know, because we've been building for, since I've been hearing this, you know, and I used to go mad as a player hearing this put out to the media. When I play, it's like, stop putting that narrative out. Like, we have to own where we are, and we have to just say, we're not good enough. We need to be better. Like, so I think a win for them is success, and I think they're an ambitious team. I like the way he talks. He's realistic. He, you know, when they lost against Italy, he was very frank about it and upfront. And I think the players are talking, seem to be talking sense. And I don't think there's, I think they're different. I think their mindset is different, which is great. It's great to hear. They just want to win and succeed. And so, did I answer your question? No, probably not. But
It wasn't exactly an easy question to answer. You know, I've thrown you onto the spot to ask you for your thoughts on something that hasn't even happened.
Yeah, I don't know then as well, because
We'll revisit it next week.
Yeah, maybe the plan is, you know, like, talking to the girls that play, that there seems to be, they're really behind what he's trying to do. So, it, you know, maybe if they see a plan and if they're getting to the plan and, you know, they play really well and don't win, well, maybe those players are buying into what they're trying to do and can see it coming together, and just they need more work, and hopefully see a few players coming in that we haven't seen yet. Like, I mean, I'm talking about girls we don't know yet, hopefully coming from the under 18s or something to push on this team the next year or two. So, come back to me next week.
I think it probably is one where if they do lose this weekend, you're probably looking back more at that Italy game as the missed opportunity rather than this weekend's match. So look, we'll obviously revisit that next week. Before you go, I do want to ask you, obviously, as well, though, like, Ireland are in essentially cup final territory on Saturday, but AIL finals are on this Sunday. And for the first time ever, women's final in the Aviva Stadium, massive occasion, Railway Union against UL Bows, 1:45 PM at the Aviva, the men's final, Terenure and Corcon following it at 4 o'clock. Then, as someone who was heavily, heavily involved in the AIL down the years, would you have ever thought a women's final was going to be played at the Aviva?
I never played in the final. I was always injured or something or other. And anyway, so no, I didn't. And I think it probably has to be a doubleheader, because it doesn't make sense if it's not a doubleheader to have a women's final there. For me, it's interesting. It's on this weekend, and like, it kind of raises the question. Like, when I look at some of our players that are playing from Ireland, I think some of them would benefit. Right, the AIL is not the standard we need it to be. No one is disputing that. But I still think there's certain players, maybe like, you know, subs that don't get much game time, that are playing very little rugby, that would probably benefit from playing some matches, some games throughout the year in the AIL.
Yeah.
Which would give them a bit of game time. It makes the competition stronger, in the sense that you've got better players. And then So the players, you know, there's a big squad. Well, I don't know, 30-something squad, and even the subs, they go, like, maybe they're released. I don't know. I actually don't know. But, well, probably not, because they're different clubs. But they're obviously different clubs. They're not going to be in contention to play the final. But it just says to me then, there, it's obviously we're not seeing the AAL. This statement, having this match on the same weekend, this concluding Six Nations, it's we are not seeing the AAL as something that we try and use for our players.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like, that's been the message realistically from in the last year or so. Like, I remember being at a briefing David Nusafora was giving about a year and a half ago, and he kind of said as much, that the international, you know, it's not going to be a competition for the international players. That's, you know, they're trying to get this Celtic Challenge off the ground, and that's going to be viewed long term as the option there, and the AIL is probably going to be the breeding ground for the younger players, and seeing who maybe has the opportunity to step up to the international stage. And it's obviously not ideal, but then I suppose at the same time, you still have to make the best out of it.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, why not put certain players in and give them a bit of game time when they're not?
Yeah.
While they learn and maybe getting 2 or 3 minutes off a bench, and their combined total in Six Nations might be 10 minutes or whatever it is, or no minutes, or, you know, very few minutes. So, I don't know. I don't know how you solve it, but if you look across England, and it's completely different. Obviously, we can't even compare. There's no point comparing. But I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but I just think maybe it deserved to. I obviously had to have the men's this weekend, but maybe it deserved its own spotlight when there was not concentration on the players that all come from some of these clubs and part of the game. I don't know. I know David Nusafora said that, and he's obviously on the way out.
But maybe, then the flip side, David Humphreys is coming in. He might have different ideas.
He might have his own ideas on it.
It actually has been interesting to see David Humphreys, from what I've seen so far, briefly in his, you're talking probably a month and a bit now into his involvement in that role, seems to be a bit more hands on the women's side of the game, even in these early stages. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah, and I would say, like,
what his ideas are going to be.
I would say, from my experience, I found David very hands-on with the sevens, because I would have played sevens and he would have come to a lot of our games. But I think realistically, and this is me calling a spade, David and Anthony were more interested in sevens than women's 15s. That was very obvious. So, and obviously the damage has been done because of that. We have a successful sevens team, which are brilliant. And look, we hopefully they medal. But now it's up to Humphreys to try and rebuild maybe a little bit of that damage that was done. So I saw him down the match in Cork, actually, which is good to see. He was around the place. So maybe there's a different approach. Who knows? But hopefully, look, what I hope is 10 years' time, when I'm another 10 years older, that we win a grandstand. We win a Six Nations. Like, I want to see that. That's what I want to see, you know? So we have to be ambitious and put the plans in place now, because it'll take 10 years for it to hopefully come to fruition.
In 10 years time, I'm going to come back to you and we'll revisit Alison Miller's Ireland 2034 Women's Six Grand Slam champions, and we'll see how far beyond that we are, or how far away from it we are.
Yeah, and if it happens quicker, I'd be delighted.
Listen, Alison, thanks a million for joining us again, and we'll try to check in with you next week and look back on the Ireland-Scotland game for a final close off on the Six Nations Championship. But until then, thanks a million for chatting to us. Lots of rugby coming up on RT over the next few days as well. Ulster against Benetton in the URC on Friday evening, live on RT2 and RT Player from 7 o'clock, coverage getting underway. Dragons and Connacht also in the URC on Saturday from 7:30 on RT2 and RT Player. And then in the Guinness Women's Six Nations, Ireland and Scotland, live coverage as well on the TV. That one gets underway at 2:45, coverage underway from 2:30, again on RT2 and the RT Player. Live commentary as well on Saturday Sport on RT Radio 1. We'll speak to you again soon.